Boker Tov world. And today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yud. But we're holding on the bottom of daf Kuf Tes Amud Beis, and we just pulled back from Yalta. And it's going over a little bit of recent history. So what happened with Yalta is that she wanted to taste Basar B'Cholov. And so Reb Nachman, of course, had to figure out how is he going to get her Basar B'Cholov before she starts throwing your wine barrels at him again. And so he decided to take some chal and have the butler put them on the barbecue on a spit, and then she would be able to have Basar B'Cholov. Problem is, of course, and let's go back to three lines up from the bottom, last word on the page, on the page, ve'anatam kor'o. But wait a minute, Reb Nachman, the Mishnah said that you're not allowed to use that unless you actually had torn it. And if you didn't tore it open, I mean, over here, he said, give it, just roast it. And that would mean she would have the taste of the milk. And the Mishnah said, that's only b'di'avad, but you have to take away the taste of the milk with chatchila. So how could you have done that? No, says Reb Nachman, you guys totally misunderstand the Mishnah. The Mishnah isn't referring to tzli, to roasting it, which is the way that we understood the Mishnah the whole time. Remember, the issue over here is that a cholov of shchuta is not considered to be basar b'cholov. But the Rabbanan answered it. So when it comes to kachal, the most that you have a problem is that it's a cholov of shchuta. Now, if the milk never actually comes out of the sacks that contain the milk, the olivoli, olivolai, I guess, in the rabbi, so then it isn't considered to be milk at all, even in Rabbana. So what we said was that l'chatchila, you should actually get rid of all of the milk by tearing it. And we were talking about tearing it, just siva'erev, and pressing it against the wall, and the whole deal, and that way you'll get out everything. But, I mean, it certainly says you have to tear it. So we understood that the meaning of the Mishnah is to boil the udder for sure is going to be usher. Why? Because then the water removes the milk from the alivonat, and it then is usher midrabanan. So you can't boil it because it's going to just go back in and create basar b'cholov. But you could actually roast it on a spit, which is what he did. But that was only b'di'avad, because the chatchila you're supposed to actually tear it even for the spit. That's how he understood it until now. And that's how Rav understood it, and that's how Rav Elazar understood it. But it turns out that Rav Nachman has a completely different approach to the Mishnah. Rav Nachman understands that the Mishnah is only being mechayev you for the kedera. So he's saying, if you're going to be boiling it, so then you have to actually tear it open, the whole deal, and press it up against the wall, because whatever comes out under those circumstances is going to be cholov that is aser min rabbana. But when it comes to tzli, according to Reb Nachman, you didn't need to do anything, because the milk never is exuded out of the udder, and therefore it was never aser, never had a din of milk. So he holds that even l'chatchila, if you're going to be putting it on a spit, there's no problem, because basically if you're roasting it, the milk is going to, whatever drips out, but it's never going to be reabsorbed because it's on a spit. And whatever remained in there and never came out in the first place is not considered to be even a cholov shchuta midrabanan, because it's not even cholov. So therefore, he says, what's the problem? So I'll give her actual basar b'cholov, even l'chatchila. So, in other words, it's a completely new approach, because until now we had both Rav and Reb Elazar. The only question that we had was the shaila of whether you have to be korea shesiva erev, do you have to press it up against the wall in order to squeeze it? But everybody had agreed that you definitely need to actually tear it, right? Okay, so he's got a completely new approach, but the approach doesn't make sense, that's a Gemara, because the Mishnah, actually, if you take a look at the way the Braita says it over, and that was the Braita that we had analyzed this whole time, it said over there, Shebish lo b'chalva. And wasn't that cooking? And that saying, if it was cooking, and we said that to mean that it was roasted, because we brought a raya from So doesn't that mean that it was cooked already? Meaning that it's only b'diavad? You're saying that you can even go l'chatchila? So b'diavad in, but l'chatchila lo. So how did you do this for Yalta? No. Remember that braita? That braita was the braita that introduced the little lamb issue. Whether if the lamb had nursed and there was milk that was actually real milk that was in the stomach. That was the part that introduced that third issue, which was the keva, the chalav of the keva. So we had the issue of the leiv and we had the issue of the chal, and that braita brought in the issue of the keva. And because over there it had to say that the lashon in terms of being usher, so here it spoke about as if it's only muter b'diavad. But who atin da'afilu lechatchila? But since in that bright, I did a kabbalah mit the sefer. Remember what was the sefer? The sefer was where you had the keva, and it was cooked together with its milk contents in a lamb that had just nursed. Where over there, the din is that that is real milk. And because of that, even b'diavad, it wasn't kosher. So over there, it was saying it was osur. So over here, it said the same lashon, if you did it, it's mutter. It was contrasting that if you did it, it's osur to the keva, to the if you did it, that it's mutter in the kal. But the truth is, says Reb Nachman, the truth is that it would have actually been mutter even l'chatchila, as I actually did l'halacha for Yalta. So tani nami reisha shebishla. Anyway, so we ended up, remember, having these two lashonot in Rav. We brought in the end the braita that proved that the first lashon of Rav was correct and that it was even mutter b'diavad. And there was that other braita that it b'mashma that it was aser. And when Rabbi Elazar, he wanted to figure out how in the world did we justify understanding that second lashon of Rav? Because there was no way of understanding the braita that we brought as a proof to Rav's first lashon. There was no way of this, of trying to interpret that to support that it would be usher. And any reason that we had to doubt Rav, we were able to explain why it was that it used that lashon. So he was pretty concerned about the fact that the second lashon of Rav was circulating, and he did not believe it. And he wanted to understand what actually that lashon of Rav was doing with the braita. So anyway, when he came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, where Rav had originally learned, so he finds Ze'iri there in the Beis HaMedrash, and he says to Ze'iri, is the person who taught Rav over the Brisas, that was called the Tana, is he here? Because I'd like to discuss with him what it was that Rav understood of those Brisas. So Ikatana, the Atnaya L'Rav Kachal, is the original person who said over the Brisas. Remember, in those days, the equivalent of a computer was the Tana, who had all of the Brisas Mesudar in his head, and he would keep reviewing them, and he would teach them to all of the people who needed to learn them. So they pointed Reb Yitzchak Bar Vadimi. He's the expert here in these Brisot, and undoubtedly he was the one that had taught it to Rav. So he went over to discuss it with Reb Yitzchak Bar Vadimi. And Reb Yitzchak Bar Vadimi said to Reb Elazar, excuse me, The story is very different than you think. Ani lo shaniti lo kal kolika. There was no mocker in the braita that I taught him that said that the kal was usher. No such thing. But I'll tell you how it happened that the second lashon of Rav actually started going around. And that was because Rav bika matzah v'gader b'gader. So this is an expression. A bika'a means a completely open valley where there's no boundaries that are there, no fences that are there, and people really don't know what piece belongs to what piece. So he found this crazy place that literally had never heard of the Isser Basar B'cholot. And when he saw that, he decided there better be some fence work over here. Of course, a mishmeret, a fence work, min rabbanan, is to be machmer beyond the call of duty. So it's lifnei mishurat hadin, in order to make sure that nobody makes this mistake. So Rav, he came to Tattlefish. Tattlefish was quite a strange little town. And he hears this woman asking her friend across the way, hey, how much milk do you need to cook properly 1 liter of meat? What? He couldn't believe it. His jaw drops. You mean to say, says Rav to himself, Lo gemiri de baser b'cholav aser? They never even heard that there's such a thing as baser b'cholav? That's crazy. So he decided he's going to stay in Tattlefish for a while and tell them not only that it's aser, but he's going to be machmer on them even when it comes to the cow, because they've gone so completely over to the other side that he has to actually create this fence. That's how it came about. But it's not that he really felt me ikar hadin that that's what happened. Rav Kahana says that's not what Rav Yitzchak Bar Avi Dimi told him. It was different, actually. It was Rav Yossi Bar Abba. He said that what Rav Yitzchak Bar Avi Dimi said was, I did teach him a brisa like that. I did teach him a brisa that said the chal was osur, but it was a special case. And it was a case of a brisa that was referring to a nursing animal. So it was talking about a menika. Now, a menika is so full of milk that over there, indeed, you're going to end up having a problem to make certain that you had to get out, because there's so much milk in there and it's already fully loaded and it's outside ready, it's at the nipple, ready to come out. And that, I said, you actually would, if you didn't do anything to get it out, there was so much milk there that it would be osur. Now, Rabbi Chia had actually took that braita. Rabbi Chia was a genius. So he actually understood all of the constraints that were involved in a particular sugya. So he understood that any idiot is going to realize that a meneket is different and it's not the same as a chal. How would anybody think that a chal would be aser b'diavad? That's crazy. They'll understand immediately that we're referring to a menekes. Now, since mi pilpulo sh Rabbi Chia, since Rabbi Chia thought everybody is as smart as him, so he just taught it over as a regular din in chal, thinking that nobody could be that dumb. So mi pilpulo sh Rabbi Chia, he said over chal, without saying I'm talking about a menekes. And Rav took him at his word. So he thought, that's how the second Lashon and Rav got going. He thought that there's actually a braita that says that chal is osur b'diavad. Now, Ravin and Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, they came to Rav Papi's home, and he served them, I mean, not he, it was his wife who served them. We'll see why that's important. He served them a beautiful dinner of chal. Okay, so Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef ate the dinner, enjoyed it. Ravin refused to eat. Now, the real reason that Ravin refused to eat was because he was from Sura, and we'll see that they had a minhag not to eat chal in Sura. So basically, where he came from, that was us. Abaya was absolutely infuriated because he thought that Ravin was being super frum, and he hated super frum people. And so if Ravin with thought that he could walk into Rav Papi's house and he could say, I'm not going to eat what you feed me, that was the most outrageous thing. So he said, Ravin Tachla, he lost, unfortunately, all of his children. So he called him Ravin, the one who loses children, can't even keep children in the world. Why didn't he eat? After all, he is so holy. Now, just think about this. Do you realize who served you that chal? Rav Papa's wife was the daughter of Rabbi Yitzchak Navcha. Rabbi Yitzchak Navcha was a Mori de'uv de'ave. He was a person who was known to be makbid on every kutzer shayud, and he knew exactly what the halacha was. And he loved the Shmiah Lambi Be'yat Nashal Havi Avdi. You'd think that she would have served him something that she hadn't seen, that her father, Rabbi Yitzchak Navcha, was matir? And good old Mr. Ravin, the newcomer on the block, he knows better than Rabbi Yitzchak Navcha, and he knows better than the whole Miseris that we have, and he has the chutzpah to go into her papi's house and not eat the meal. This reminds me of a story of my grandmother. So, Reb Lazer Silver, who was the Rav in Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati was the center of reform in America. That was where they had the big seminary for reform. And so he, Dafka, was always on the warpath. And he would, in order not to insult any people in the town, he made a general rule. He doesn't eat outside of his own home, because then it would be all question, who is he, Samech on, who is not Samech on. So he just would always say, I don't eat out of my home. And everybody was used to that, and they didn't take it personally. Anyway, so he comes to visit Rav Ruderman in Baltimore, and my grandmother is, of course, also is like, the wife, do you know who the wife of Rav Ruderman is? Okay, so it's the same situation. Reb Lazer Silver refused to eat her food. So he opens up his little package with his own food, and all he wants is to be able to use the dishes. She tells him, if my food is not good enough for you, your dishes are certainly not good enough for me. So she refused to give him any dishes. Anyway, so it was sort of a standoff. But anyway, this is the kind of situation where you have to actually sort of adjust for the situation. Now, this is an amazing, this next Gemara is, wait a minute. So actually the reason was that Besura lo achle kachle, in Surah, which was where he had come from, Rubin, they had a minig not to eat chal at all. So because of that, the mokum that he came from, they didn't eat chal. But in Pumbedita, they did eat chal. So that's why, basically, it turned out that it looked like he was being a big chutzpanyak. Now, this next piece was one of the most favorite chazalim that my Rebbe used to say over. He would always say this near Yom HaKippurim. And because this was a mitzvah that happened on Erev Yom Kippur, as we'll see. And he would bring out the personality of the Talmidei Chachamim and the Gemara. So this was a story about Rami Bar Tamri. And they used to call him also Rami Bar Dikule, because, of course, a tamar is a date and a dekel is a date tree. So sometimes they called him the date, sometimes they called him the dekel. Anyway, he actually came from Pumbedita. And he had the minhag that they ate kachal. And he had come to Surah on Erev Yom Kippur. And everybody on Erev Yom Kippur, of course, they made a suda. It's a big mitzvah to have a suda on Erev Yom Kippur. Remember, we had the suda before by Osav Esbeno, that you have to tell people, if it's Erev Yom Kippur, you have to tell them that I sold the mother or I sold the child, because you have to assume that everybody's going to be shechting today. Anyway, it's Erev Yom Kippur. He has nothing to eat. Everybody takes the chal from the animals that they had shechted, and they throw them out in the garbage. So he goes around and he collects all of these chals from the garbage. Now, he's got this beautiful seuda of dozens of chals, highest quality meat, and all of it for free. And he eats them. Anyway, so the police grab him, a chutzpah, somebody walking around Surah and eating chal against the rules of Surah. So they bring him into Rav Chisda's Bezdin. So Rav Chisda says to him, what kind of chutzpah is that? Who do you think you are? Amai Tavirachi. So Rami Bar Tamri says, I come from Surah. And I'm from Pumbedita. And that's where Rav Yehuda is, the Rosh Hashiva. And me ata the Rav Yehuda ana, and I eat udders. What's the problem? Oh, big deal, says Rav Chisda. So you eat udders. So therefore you can walk around our town like a big shot and spit in everybody's eyes and go ahead and eat udders in front of them. And you apparently are total Am Haaretz. You never heard of the halacha that notnim alav chumrei hamakom sheyatza misham v'chumrei hamakom shehalach lesham. You don't know that when there are different minagim, you're not allowed to be noyeg according to your minag. You have to keep both chumres, whichever one is more machmer. I think we should beat you up. Omar Lay says, Rami Bar Tamri, excuse me, I ate them outside of the tomb of your city. I'm not mechuyev to keep your minhagim near your city. This, by the way, is very nogeya in cases where people arrive from Eretz Yisrael in an airport on Yontav, in Yontav on Chutz La'aretz. Since the airport is generally outside of the tchum of the city, you are not mechuyev to keep Yontav Sheni in the airport. And therefore, you don't have a problem. You'll have to stay in the airport till you go into town, till the nighttime, but you can arrive in an airport in places where people are keeping Yontav Sheni because an airport doesn't have a yishuv, and therefore there's no din of keeping the Chumrei HaMokom Shehalach L'Sham. This is a halacha that is very, very nogia. So, therefore, said Rami Bar Tamrei, look, you know, the fact that you guys are control freaks, and you think that everybody's got to act like Sura, I wasn't in the tchum of Sura, and I didn't have to pay any attention to your menagim. Oh, yeah? So let me ask you something, Rav Chista, you ganav. So what did you roast it with, huh? You had to roast your kal? Probably a ganav walking around stealing. So he said, Omar Le, I found purtsani. I had these are pits from grapes, and there were wine presses that were near the town of Sura, and they were hefker. Well, ha-ha, so you don't care about Yayin Nesach then, do you? How did you know that they weren't filled with Yayin Nesach, and now you've been in, it's even worse than I thought. You're a bigger Amaretz than I even thought. Dilma mi Yayin Nesach ave. No, said Rami Bar Tamrei. Don't you know that if it's 12 months after the time of the winemaking, then they become mutter, even if it had been Yayin Nesach, because once it's Yud Beis Chodesh, so the Chachamim say in the Mishnah that at that point it's completely mutter. Well, it was probably Gezel. I mean, the people that had made the wine, you know, you were probably walked off with their stuff. A robber. Omale, no, it was clearly Yush Baalim Havi. There were all kinds of fungus. It was growing in them. It was absolute garbage. They for sure were miyayish on it because otherwise they would have collected it before it had gone to pot like that. Then Rav Chista says, sees him, that he's not even wearing tefillin. Unheard of in those days. Chazir de lo monach tefillin. Here it's Erev Yom Kippur. The guy doesn't even wear tefillin. Omale, my time lo monach tefillin. Amale, I am a choli meayin. I have terrible stomach trouble.
And with all those kachals.
Yeah, yeah. And Omar, I'm going to bring out what he said. Omar Rav Yehuda, choli meayin, potter min atvillin. If you have stomach trouble, then you don't wear tefillin. Then he saw he wasn't wearing any tzitzis. So he said to him, this is crazy. A robber, a chutzpun yak, and he doesn't wear tefillin. He's always got an excuse. So what's your excuse for not wearing tzitzis? Oh, that? I don't own my clothing. I'm too poor to have clothing, so I borrowed something from someone for a day or two. And you're not chayev to wear tzitzis on a borrowed beged? Talit she'ulahi, v'yoma revi'ida, talit she'ula, kol shloshim yom, Petura minat tzitzis. Meanwhile, while Rav Chista is beating him up and trying to figure out why, how he can catch him on something or another, they bring in a guy into the Beis Din, and that person was not being mechabed avi v'imai, and they wanted to beat the guy into submission to take care of his parents. Kaftu, so they were tying him up to the makas pole over there, and they were going to beat him up. And Rami Bar Tamrei says, what kind of craziness? Let that guy go right now. To Tanya, there's the Braita says, Referish, Kol mitzvah taseh shematan tzchara betzidah, ein beidin shelamata muzorin aleha. If the Torah said, Leman ya'arichun yamecha, so then that's what it's telling you. This is what you get. You want to be mechabed avi v'imai, ya'arichun yamecha. You don't want to, so drop dead early. I don't care. You decide. So that means that it's not up to the Beis Din to decide, because otherwise, why would the Torah be giving you the information? So, ein Beis Din shelamata muzorin aleha. Oh, my lord, Rav Chista said, boy, I see you're a pretty sharp guy. Chazin lecha techarifa tuva. Rami Bar Tamrei says to him, are you kidding? There's no way to be sharp in this town, because there's nobody intelligent enough to be sharp too. But if you would come to Pumbedisa, where Raviyehuda is, then you'd see what it means for me to be sharp. I can't even show off around here. That is a great story. So anyway, he would, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz would always go to town. He says, yeah, listen to this guy. Incredible. He's too poor to even own any clothing. He is suffering from terrible stomach trouble to the point that he can't even wear tefillin. It's Erev Yom Kippur, and the entire country would be very happy to invite him to a meal for Erev Yom Kippur, but no. He goes through all the garbage bills, right? Doesn't even own a piece of clothing so that he could have some tzitzis. No, doesn't own any clothing. So he goes through the garbage bills with his sick stomach on Erev Yom Kippur, finds some absolutely filthy garbage to cook it with, because that way he got to be sure that it was hefker, rather than just to ask somebody, okay, can you give me a five cents for a cup of coffee? I mean, what does he need? He needs a piece of wood to cook it on. And this way, he is so completely and totally outside of the reach of anybody's opinion, anybody's needing anybody in this town. It's like he's living in a different world. Right? This is what it means to be on Erev Yom Kippur, an absolutely independent person who lives his life with full happiness with what he's got, and not to make himself dependent in these guys who can't even think in Surah. Such a powerful personality portrait. It's like, wow. All
right. It's like the opposite. Rabbi Rosenblum from MS Rencher, where Danny's from, used to always say, if you're gonna become a communal rabbi, you better get a good mouthwash, because you're gonna be doing a lot of kissing up.
Well put. Omaya Bayler of Safta. No Safta. Now, we're moving on now to the issue of Kavet. So remember, what is the topic that we've been on? We've been on the topic of those organs that have special issues in preparing them. So the kachal, we have to worry about the bosa b'cholav issue. The lave, we have to worry about the blood in the heart's chambers. Then we had the case of the stomach of young nursing animals. We have to worry about the bosa b'cholav issues there as well. How about liver? The reason that we've got a problem of liver is because essentially we view liver as being completely supersaturated with blood. Okay, nonetheless, it's not even though lamaisa, you're not going to be able to get all of the blood out. The truth is, you don't have to get the blood out of the evorim. Because as long as the blood is actually inside of the meat and has never been poresh, it's just considered to be part of the muscle itself. Muscle comes along with the blood it was saturated in. The only time that you've got a problem of blood is where you are going to be boiling it. So if you boil the blood is going to come out into the water, and then it's going to be reabsorbed into the meat. And then it will have been dam that was real dam that was already purish from the evarim. And then it's osir. And that's why when we salt meat, when we used to salt meat, I shouldn't say when we salt meat, but it used to be that everybody had always seen mommy salting meat. And, of course, you would always see the salt that was held in such a way that the blood would be able to drip down and not be reabsorbed. So it would fall off of the meat and then go down into the sink whatever you put underneath it to catch the blood, but it would never be in the blood itself. And the same thing would be true about sili. If you roast, and we talked about this a minute ago when we were talking about Reb Nachman roasting the kal, when you roast, so then essentially, since it's on a spit, we're talking about roasting on a spit, so whatever is exuded is just burned up by the fire as it comes out, and the meat will never reabsorb that blood. And so because of that, you don't really have to salt fritzli. And we put a little bit of salt, which is called melicha litzli. But miyikar adin, the tzliya itself will remove the salt, the blood, and it won't go back in because it's on a spit. Now the question is, according to the way Rashi understands the sugya over here, and actually the way we end up paskening, is the question is this. I understand that there's no problem of eating the liver itself any more than there's a problem of eating any meat that has not had the salt take out the blood and then possibly remove it. But what I want to know is, can you boil it? So what happens if after you salt the liver, or after you roast the liver, since the liver, in terms of the halacha, is viewed as kulei dam, it's essentially all blood. That's why we said yesterday, the Torah asserted dam, it was mater kaveh, right? That was Yalta's point. So if that's the case, even if I can eat the liver, if I then put it into a stew and I want to stew these livers, or I want to fry these livers in oil, am I allowed to do that? Or at that point, I have to say, look, I need to admit, you can't get all of the blood out of liver. So maybe even though I salted it, or even though I roasted it, if I want to put it now into a medium, that medium, the oil or the water, is going to draw out whatever residual blood there is, and the whole thing is essentially residual blood, and therefore will be usher. So Abaya told Rav Safra, listen,
wouldn't be usher to eat?
What?
If there was residual blood, it wouldn't be usher to eat like that?
No.
I mean, like, no?
No, because as I said before, you can eat blood in a varim without doing anything. You can take a piece of raw meat, as everybody who makes your beautiful dry jerky knows. Yes, indeed, I see our South Africans smiling over here. And you don't actually need to get out the dam. That's part of what's so delicious about dry jerky, is that it's extremely rich, right? So the idea over here is, I want, however, to then cook some of that. Am I allowed to cook it? Or will the cooking actually bring out the blood, even though I've already done tzli, or I've already done melicha? What's the din? So Abaya said to Rav Safra, when you go up to Eretz Yisrael, ask them, how do they deal with liver? So kavda ma atonbe. How do you actually treat the liver after it's been salted and after it's been tzli, after it's been roasted? Is it mutter to boil it? Now, this is how Rashi understands it. Tosfos has a different approach. We don't paskin like Tosfos. He thinks we're talking about Sarabino Tam, that we're talking about liver that has not been salted. And we'll see there's other issues which we'll talk about in a moment. So when Rav Safra went up to Eretz Yisrael, he finds Rav Zrika. And he asks Rav Zrika, how do you guys act with liver? Because Abaya wants to know whether he's allowed to boil it. So Rav Zrika said, allowed to boil it? I used to boil liver for Abani all the time. And that was like the way that he usually ate it. And he would eat. I never heard of a problem. So Rav Safra comes back to Abaye, and he said, no, there's no problem, because I heard from Rav Zrika that used to eat it. Oh, my Abaye said, oh, my God, what a waste of time. That's not what I wanted to know. Obviously, there'd be no problem in eating the liver that you boiled. I want to know whether the liver that was boiled in a pot with other things, whether the blood of the liver would answer those things. That's what I wanted to know. Of course you're allowed to boil the liver. Now, why is that? So this is a issue that we've spoken about before, and I believe that our own very dear special Mr. Gavi has actually used his magic pen to write this down. And that was, Aide de Tride le Miflat lo bali. Anything which is troubled by exuding is not able to absorb. And that applied to the liver would mean that even though when you put the liver in water and you boil it, there certainly is a great deal of additional blood that is going to be pulled out of that liver by the water. But it won't go back into the liver. Because since we say the liver has a din of kuleidam, no matter how much you boil the liver, it keeps exuding blood. And as long as it is involved in exuding, it's lemiflat, it's being polate, it will not be bolea. So therefore, if you boil liver on its own, I never had a doubt about that. Of course, it would not become usser. Now, maybe there would be circumstances where you allowed it to sit in it after it cooled off, and then that's possible. Because of that, lemaisa, there are many who are makbid not to boil the liver even on its own without this problem of ushering other things. Fine, that's a specific case. But I never wanted to know about this at a baya. I'm shocked that that's what you think I wanted to know. I wanted to know, can you boil liver in a pot with other pieces of meat that are not liver and that are not going to be torrid to be miflat, and they may well be bolea, the dam of the liver, and it would asr them. So Rav Safra says, I have to ask you, you're sending me back with all of these questions. I don't understand really what the issue is, with all due respect. Why are you so sure that if you cook the liver in water on its own, that then there'd be no problem? You must know the Mishnah. And there is, in fact, a Mishnah. I mean, it's not a well-known Mishnah because it's in Masechet Trumot. And many people are not Pekim and Zroim, I don't know. But, it says Beferish in the Mishnah that if, in fact, you cook the liver itself, that it's Eina Ne'eseret. The liver does not Aser itself. That's what it says Beferish in that Mishnah, even though the idea over there was obviously referring to all kinds of issues that had to do with Zroim. But meanwhile, actually brought in over there that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, HaKaved Oseret, but Eina Ne'eseret. So the Mishnah says, Beferish, that the blood of the liver that you're boiling may Aser other food, but it itself is never going to become Aser. Mipneshi hi poletet ve'eina bolat. That's the Lashon of the Mishnah in Trumot. So I don't get it. If you knew for sure, you're telling me, I knew for sure that there was no Isser and boiling the liver, how did you know it for sure? Because you knew that Mishnah. So then you also knew that it's Eina, that it's Oseret, the same way you knew it's Eina Naseret. So how did you only know part of the Mishnah? The Tzna Nakaved Oseret ve'Eina Naseret, Mipneshi Poletet ve'Eina Bolat. So now, how come you've got a question? I don't understand your question. Either you do know the Mishnah or you don't know the Mishnah. I thought that you had a shaila about the halacha of the in general, but I don't understand now. I see that you obviously knew the Mishnah, so why don't you know the whole Mishnah? So Tosfos asked the obvious question. If Rav Safra knew the Mishnah, then why didn't Rav Safra just, when he told Rav Safra, go up and ask them what the din is, Rav Safra obviously knew the Mishnah, so why didn't he just tell him the Mishnah that was there lechatchila? What exactly did he wait until he saw this before he said it? Obviously, that was the question. So Tosis discusses the shaiva over there, that whether it was considered to be a stam Mishnah or not, because it was Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. But then when he saw that he was paskening on the basis of that Mishnah, so he said, why are you sending me to ask in Eretz Yisrael? So Abaya said, that Mishnah doesn't prove anything. You don't understand that Mishnah, because you cannot be sure that what the Mishnah is referring to is the blood of the liver. It may well be referring to a kaved that is usser. Let's say you've got a treifa kaved. So this animal was found to be a treifa. The kaved of a treifa has got two problems over there. It has its own shamnunis, so it's got a something that has the taste of meat in it because of the taste of the fat that's in the liver. And the question is, I want to know, if you have a completely kosher liver and your only problem is the dam, whether that dam is considered to be osir. But that Mishnah may be referring to shamnunis. And when it said that a liver can still osir other foods, it's not because of the dam, but because of the shamnunis. I need to know, mishum damamai, what is the din just in terms of the pure dam? That I would like you to please ask them. Fine. So Rav Safra, the next time he came to Eretz Yisrael, he finds Rabbi Zrika and he asks them, and he explains, what I asked you before, I made a mistake. That's not what Abaye wanted to know. He wanted to know whether other things are usher. Omar Lay, that's also not a question. Because I could tell you, halacha l'maisa, I, together with Yanai Bereder Reb Ami, we went on a visit to Reb Yudah Bereder Reb Shimon Ben Paz. And they brought us a kanya bekufe v'achalna. Now, a kanya bekufe is, again, you've got to be South African to really appreciate a kanya bekufe, because everyone else will run out of the room. But a kanya bekufe is essentially, you have all of the organs that were hanging on the kona, that were attached to the kona, to the trachea. So they take out this trachea, which has the heart and the liver and the lungs, everything is still attached. It's all cooked up, and they serve it to us as a delicacy. So we've got now the entire kona and everything attached to it, which included the liver. And that's what we were served, and that's what we ate, b'yachalna. And obviously that had been entirely cooked. It was cooked together with the liver. And that means that the blood of the liver was mutter, even after it comes out of the liver, even if the particular piece that you're eating, which could be lung or heart, is not in a state of being polite, and therefore it will be bolea. So apparently that bolea doesn't answer it. Matkita Rav Ashi, Vitem Rav Shmuel, Mizrokinia. How can you bring a raya from that particular case? Because if you cook up a kana together with all of its attached organs and you leave the mouth of the kana outside of the pot, then what happens is that all of the blood is going to take the easy way out. And the easy way out is not to be forced out by coming out into the water, but actually it will go out through the kona. This we spoke about when we were learning Dinei Treifas, even though these things are not literally open to the kona, obviously. And that was a mistake, and I don't understand Rashi. But we traced it before, if you recall, through the various veins that are actually able to transfer blood from one to the other. And because of that, it could well be that the pi kona was chutz l'kedera. And if the pi kona was chutz l'kedera, then there wouldn't have been any problem because the easy way out for the blood wouldn't have been never to get into the water in the first place. And there's another possibility, which you know nothing about, and this is something that we do not do nowadays. The reason we don't do it nowadays is because in classic form, we're not bekiyim. Okay. This is like a big thorn in the side of many mefarshim that half of the halachas were not negeas because we're not bekiyim. A lot of poskim didn't like that very much at all. I mean, obviously the Torah is meant to be applied with the level of expertise that's available to you. Okay, but in any event, we don't do this. What is this? Cauterization. So they used to cauterize the meat, and if it's cauterized before boiling, so then the blood is going to stay inside of the meat, which, as I explained before, is mutter, and it will never come out to aser. There's two ways that you can cauterize. You can either cauterize by using boiling hot water, or you can cauterize by using something highly astringent, like, and Rashi uses the word astringent, like vinegar. And they would do that. So maybe there's three possibilities here where you have insufficient information to be able to tell a buyer what the din is. Because first of all, maybe pikana chutz l'kedera, or even if it weren't that way, they may have been michla tafechovet le'meikara, they may have first been cholate, which is what Ravuna used to do. Ravuna would he would actually becholate the liver in vinegar before he would cook it. And that would prevent any blood from coming out of it. And Reb Nachman would also cauterize it. He would cauterize it in boiling water. So you don't have information just because they served that to you. You don't know how it was prepared. And therefore, basically, the fact that Reb Yehuda Bereder Reb Shimon Ben Pazi gave it to you is not a basis to be matirit. Okay, we will Bezrat Hashem continue on this sugya. So we've had so far some fascinating special cases, starting with the Mishnah that brings the special case of heart and udder. And we went from there to discuss the special case of milk that's in the stomach itself. And then we moved on today to discuss the din of dam, which is in the kavet. All of these are unique problems and may have to be dealt with in special ways, as you know from your own kitchen, in how it is that you prepare liver for achila. Okay.